This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. We're going to start off with yours truly, Johnny Dollar, this week. We'll hear his December 9th, 1956 broadcast titled The Burning Car Matter. After that, it's Dragnet and A Mad Killer at Large, their story from August 11th, 1949.
From Hollywood, it's time now for... Johnny Dollar.
Earl Foreman here.
Foreman?
Tri-State Life and Casualty. I'm the branch office manager down here.
Oh, sorry, Mr. Foreman, but the answer is no.
Well, this is an arson case, Dollar, and we're already having to make one payoff
on it. I'm sorry, but it'll have to wait. I'm going to get as far away from this New England winter as I can.
Well, for that, I don't blame you, but there's no reason you shouldn't
come. Look,
down.
I've had a rough year of it. I'm tired, and I'm cold. And unless I can get down to where the warm, balmy breezes waft in...
Dollar, I have got to have you on this case. There's a lot at stake. Now, my office is down here...
No, sir, I'm sorry. You
down
see...
Down here in Sarasota.
I just can't do it, Mr. Foreman. I've already made a plane reservation for Sarasota, Florida. And this is one time I'm going to... Where did you say your branch office is?
Sarasota, Florida.
Bob Bailey, in the exciting adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Tri-State Life and Casualty Insurance Company Home Office, Hartford, Connecticut. Following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the burning car matter. Expense account item one, which I thought I was going to have to absorb myself. $129, transportation and incidentals to Sarasota, Florida. It was nearly 5 p.m. when I got there, so instead of checking into a hotel, I taxied, that's item two, a dollar even, I taxied to Earl Foreman's office in the Conroy building. He turned out to be a tall, lanky, easygoing fellow with clear blue eyes and a ready smile.
Sit in an office and talk business this time of day? You're in Florida now, Johnny.
Well, I thought from your call this was a pretty urgent matter, Mr. Foreman.
It is.
Arson, you said.
Yeah, probably, but here's no reason we can't go out to my little shack on the quay and be comfortable while we talk about it. Besides, Mike will want you for dinner.
Mike?
My wife, Gertrude.
Oh.
Come on, my jalopy's right out at the curb. Come on, Johnny.
Poor man was a misnomer for this man because his jalopy turned out to be a spanking new Cadillac, complete with air conditioning and all the fixings. And the shack, anything but. It was on St. Armand's Quay across Sarasota Bay from the mainland, a beautiful two-story concrete and stucco job. The big yard backed on a quiet bayou, and there, tied up at a private dock, was a 24-foot lap-strake speedboat, ideal for fishing the Gulf of Mexico.
After all, as long as you're down here on expense account...
Yeah, but it's charged to your company, remember?
Oh. Hey, there she is at the door.
Huh?
The big, fat, overbearing broad I'm married to.
This was another switch. For Earl's wife, standing in the doorway, was the cutest little trick I'd seen in a long time. Petite, pretty and blonde, and with eyes that you noticed right away because they were almost green. Eyes that suddenly narrowed as she looked at me. And I wondered why.
Johnny Dollar, did you say?
That's right. Insurance investigator down here to look into those fires.
Oh.
Any objections?
No. No, of course not. Just set your bags here in the hall, Johnny.
All right, thanks.
And wouldn't you like a drink after your long trip?
Yeah, and you can get me one, too.
Scotch, Johnny. Martin's VVO.
Oh, great. Well, soda, please.
Sit down.
Thanks. I take it Mike isn't too interested in the insurance business, huh?
You know, she used to be a singer, dancer.
Oh, well, this is a little different. But now, tell me all.
Well, actually, I guess we ought to wait until Arnold Carr gets back.
Carr?
Carr Brothers, Lumber Enterprises. Arnold runs the business, and his brother Edward... Well, Ed just shares the profits. Real black sheep of the family, from what I've been able to learn.
Oh?
Anyway, they have yards all over the state. There's one here in Sarasota, one up the coast a ways at Fort Pierce, and still another at Arcadia. That's about 40 miles inland, just east of here. And there was one up in Orlando.
Was?
Completely destroyed by fire a couple of weeks ago. And a $120,000 claim has been filed.
Wow.
That's where Arnold Carr is then, in Orlando, trying to clear things up. Here's your drink.
Oh, thanks.
Here, Earl.
Yeah. Well, to the gods and goddesses and us.
But shouldn't I be up in Orlando then?
Arnold's on his way back here now. He lives here. He just went up there to arrange for clearing off and selling the property.
You mean he's planning to just pocket the money? If Tri-State pays off, I mean.
Looks like it.
But I take it you suspect arson.
Yes, Earl suspects arson, Johnny, and so does Arnold Carr. At least he says he does, but they have no reason.
No? How about the other fires? Or attempted fires?
Oh, where?
At Arcadia, for one, but they got it out in time.
At least that's the way Arnold Carr reported it. The way he tells
it. Let me tell it, Mike.
Oh.
There was another at the yard here in Sarasota. Arnold himself discovered it one night when he was just driving around.
But nothing to indicate it was attempted arson.
No,
well,
and the authorities up in Orlando found no indication of it there.
Mike, you know as well as I do that a lumberyard fire will obliterate signs of arson better than any other kind of fire in the world.
But she has a point, though, Earl. Unless there's some evidence of arson.
Of course.
Yeah, why send for me?
Well, mostly because...
Actually, because Arnold Carr suspects him.
But he's given you no real reason.
None at all.
I think he has a real reason, but he just won't tell us. Wait till you see him. He's going to call when he gets in. We'll run over to his place on Longboat Key.
What about his brother? Edward, did you say?
I've never met him. He's always stayed in Orlando.
I was wondering if he might tell things that Arnold is holding back.
Edward Carr wouldn't know anything.
You can never be too sure. Look, why can't you agree with me for a... that must be Arnie now. Excuse me. Hello?
This is Arnold Carr.
Oh, hi, Arnie. Johnny Dollar arrived, so we'll be... Well, here, I'll let you talk to him. Here, Johnny.
No.
Okay.
No, Earl, listen.
What?
I told you before it was arson. It was arson again tonight.
Tonight?
What's that?
Arcadia just went up in flames. The whole yard.
Good Lord. Did you hear that, Johnny?
Yeah, I heard it.
Can you prove it was arson tonight in Arcadia and before in Orlando?
I have proof.
Well, Arnie, we'll be over just as fast.
No.
What?
No. Wait for me there at your home.
Well, but look now.
You mustn't come here. And I mustn't stay here because I...
Now, listen, man. You, Arnie? Well, I guess he's ready to tell us now.
A suspicion began to grow in my mind. A suspicion that Mike apparently shared with me, that Arnold Carr himself might be responsible for the fires. After all, he was the only one who had seemed to know about the two unsuccessful attempts. He himself had planted the idea of arson. He'd lost no time in filing claim for the Orlando burnout. But Earl said I was wrong. Arnold was too honest a man. Earl had also said we were only 15 minutes from Carr's home. So when half an hour passed, we called him back. Got a busy signal. After the fourth try, the three of us took off in Earl's cab. As we pulled into Carr's driveway, we could see him through the picture window, sitting at his desk, telephone in hand, apparently engrossed in a call. Then, as we walked up to the door, I noticed something else. Arnold Carr looked enough like me to be my brother. Maybe that explained Mike's reaction when she first saw me.
Hey, Arnie.
Can't you see? He's on the phone in there.
Well, the least he can do is hear his own doorbell.
Earl, wait. Good Lord.
What's the matter?
Through the window.
Oh, no.
Earl?
Stand back.
Earl, for heaven's sake, what is it?
Couldn't you see from out there?
No, what's wrong?
Well, Johnny...
Right through the forehead, Earl. Looks like a .38. Before I could stop him, Earl took the phone out of the dead man's hand and called headquarters. Mike turned pale and slumped into a chair. And I gave the place a quick rundown, checked doors, windows, etc. A few minutes later, an officious young sergeant named Larkin arrived and took over.
.38 caliber straight through the middle of the forehead. Were all three of you here when it happened? Mr. Foreman, Mrs. Foreman, and who are you?
The answer to your first question, Sergeant, is no, none of us was here. And this is Johnny Dollar, insurance investigator.
Hiya.
You insurance guys work pretty fast. You related to Mr. Carr?
No, why?
Look a little like him. Who busted in the front door? The killer?
I did. When we drove up, we saw Mr. Carr sitting there at his desk. We rang the doorbell and knocked, but...
When he didn't move, you took things in your own hands and busted in, huh?
That's right.
You haven't moved anything, have you?
No.
Except I took the phone out of his hand to call you.
Dollar, if you're any kind of investigator, you should have known better than let him touch anything. Now, let's see. The shot must have come from somewhere near this window by the fire. Ah, sure, here we are. Bullet hole right through the pane. Bullet was fired from outside.
You're sure, Sergeant?
Sure, I'm sure. Look for yourself. You call yourself an investigator? Hey, Cummings, Woolway, check the area around that window beside the chimney out there for footprints. Maybe an empty cartridge case. Now, you folks get out of here so I can call Doc Hanley over and get on with my investigation. And no, Dollar, I don't need any of your help.
Well, thank you, Sergeant.
Your job is fires, not... Hey, where did Mrs. Foreman go?
Out to the car.
Why? Who told her she could leave?
Who told her she had to sit here looking at a corpse?
All right, Dollar, all right. Just be sure the three of you stick around town in case I decide to question you further.
Oh, of course, Sergeant.
Yeah.
Not shot by somebody standing outside? What do you mean, Johnny?
Oh, I spotted that bullet hole in the window, too.
So?
I also noticed there were no particles of glass on the inside sill.
But there were some on the outside.
Yeah. The shot that made that hole was fired from inside that room to make it look as though it had come from outside.
Then somebody was in there with Arnold Carr.
Yeah. Either somebody he let in or who had normal access to the house. And he had to stop Arnold from talking about the fire in Arcadia. Hey, how much do you know about his brother, Edward?
Nothing, really, outside of what Arnold told me.
Was either of them married? Family of any sort?
Arnie wasn't, but I...
Arnold's death means Edward will own the business, then.
Well, yes.
And he lives up in Orlando, scene of the first big fire.
Yes, good heavens, Johnny, you don't think his own brother...
Where can I rent a car?
Take Mike's Chevy. It's in the carport at the house, but what are you going
to
do?
Drive up to Orlando by way of Arcadia. When I got to Arcadia, only a few people were standing around the remains of the fire. One hose company was still working on it, and a couple of police were poking about in the embers. Walking toward it, I almost stumbled over a little old man sitting alone in the darkness beside a palm tree, hunched over, his head in his hands, sobbing. He didn't even look up when I stopped beside him.
Like losing part of my own life, it is.
You lost someone in the fire, sir?
No, son. Only part of my life. I helped build up that yard, me and Mr. Arnie.
Arnold Carr.
All along he's been worried about it. And last week when him and me smell smoke and come over here and put out the barrel of trash that was smoldering, he knew.
Knew what? That somebody was trying to burn him out?
That's why he stopped by tonight on his way home. That's why we drove over here, him and me. And I brought my gun just in case. Yeah. Well, we got here too late. It was already blazing. And when he seen the automobile pulling away...
What auto?
Yes, Frank, he said to me. I knowed he was the one trying to burn me out, he said.
Who, old-timer? Who do you mean?
He didn't say. Then he called the fire department.
That car that pulled away, what was it?
Just a auto. Big, white Buick.
But he tied it in with whoever set the fire.
All he said was, I knowed he was the one.
Do you know who it was he meant?
Well, he told me even if I did know, I should never tell. Even the police.
Well, who do you think it was?
Break my word to Mr. Arnie? Never, son.
All right, look, old man, I'm sorry to have to tell you this. Mr. Arnie's dead.
What? But he can't be. He was... You.
Huh?
Maybe you thought in the darkness I wouldn't know you, but I do know you.
Now, just a minute, old-timer.
If Mr. Arnie's dead, it's because you killed him.
What?
Just like you set the fire.
No, I'm not who you
and
think
I'll
I am.
I'll kill you. That's what I'll do.
Put down that gun.
I'll kill you.
Act two of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, in just a moment. Back in the old days, the very old days, that is, a girl named Cassandra had a corner on the Oracle Market. But nowadays, you can do some foretelling yourself. On Jukebox Jury, for example, you can help decide which of Tin Pan Alley's new recordings are destined for the hit brackets and which ones are likely to spiral all the way down to oblivion. Remember, Jukebox Jury is yours to hear on most of these same stations every Sunday. Now, Act Two of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar and the Burning Car Matter.
Expense account, item three, $5.15, gas for the borrowed Chevy to keep me going to Orlando. Either the old man's eyesight was bad or he was just a lousy shot. Either way, it was okay by me. I hated to slap him down, but there was no point hanging around Arcadia trying to explain things to the local authorities. So after making sure I hadn't really hurt him, I appropriated his gun and took off fast. He'd thought I was someone else. Even I had noticed a family-type resemblance to myself and Arnold Carr. Sergeant Larkin had asked me if I was related to him. And now the old man at the fire had apparently thought I was the one who... Oh, well, I'm afraid I made the rest of the trip to Orlando in somewhat less than legal time. And at police headquarters, I barged into the office of Lieutenant Cal Hudson without bothering to be announced.
So early in the morning? Sit down while I finish that report, Mr. Carr.
Thanks.
I'm trying to reach you, but we got no answer to the phone at your house.
Well, that's very interesting, Lieutenant.
I'm afraid I have the painful duty of notifying you that your brother Arnold down in Sarasota last night... Why did you say very interesting, Mr. Carr? Or had you already learned... Well, I'll be doggone.
Yeah. You're not the first one.
Who are you?
Johnny Dollar, insurance investigator.
I can't believe it. You... Dollar, you look enough like Edward Carr to be his twin. You even sound a lot like
him. I take it you haven't located Edward yet.
Well, no.
Lieutenant, I think Edward Carr is the firebug we're after. And the killer.
Wait a minute.
Briefly as possible, I told him of Arnold Carr's phone call to Earl Poorman. His emotional upset just before he was killed. I told him Arnold had been murdered by someone inside the house, someone close to him. And that everything indicated that someone could very well be Edward Carr.
That's still all just theory, Dollar, without any proof. Well, I will admit that Edward is a pretty worthless playboy living off the profits of the lumberyard.
In any event, the lieutenant promised to put out an APB on Edward Carr. It's item four, $3.25. Before I left him, he gave me Ed Carr's address, 1726 Allen Place. As I expected, there was no answer to the doorbell at 1726, so I tried visiting up the street. It quickly became clear that Ed Carr wasn't very popular in this otherwise quiet, well-ordered neighborhood.
Those big, noisy parties at all hours of the night. Cars parked up and down the street, blocking respectable people's driveways.
Yes, ma'am.
You know,
well,
once in a while you expect a person to have callers and such. Me, I have the Ladies' Bridge Club every third Wednesday, for instance.
Well, that's nice.
But these are all ladies, not like some of the trash that man and his friends have, dancing and drinking and carrying on at all hours.
Yes, you mentioned cars.
You know, people like Mrs. Hereford Robbins. She's awfully nice. And Janet Osterworthy. Now, she's a widow.
Well,
and you know, she could have her pick of anybody she liked, but does she ever look at another man? No, sir. And then there's
Mrs. Harper.
Yes?
You mentioned cars. Do you know what kind Mr. Carr drove?
Why, yes. It was a big white one.
And the make?
Well, no. My husband, when he was alive, always drove a Maxwell, and I guess that's the only kind I ever got to know by name. But Mr. Carr's is white. Only I guess that isn't much help to you, is it? All the white cars here in Florida, I mean.
Look.
Now, even that blonde hussy who's around him all the time drives a white car. Oh, I really shouldn't use a word like that, though, should I? But it fits.
Wait a minute. What blonde, Mrs. Harper?
Mr. Dollar. I don't pay any attention to people like that. Why, you think she owned that house of his, the way she keeps popping in and out all hours as if she belonged there.
Mrs. Harper.
And drives all the way up from Sarasota, too.
Do you know who she is?
I do not. I refuse to pay any attention to people like... And the way she dresses, too, like a newly rich chorus girl with all her fancy clothes and furs and things.
How do you know she comes from Sarasota?
By the license on her car, of course. Every city has its own number, you know that very well. And hers is 12WW something.
And you don't know her name?
Of course not.
flaunting all those expensive furs as though she'd bought and paid for them herself. And if there's anything I hate to see, it's a little shrimp loaded down with furs. Now, a tall person like me, and
well,
her
thanks.
Eyes... Oh, if there's anyone I don't trust, it's a person with green eyes. Well,
thank you, Mrs. Harper. Her description of Carr's girlfriend stopped me in my tracks. That description could fit Mike Poorman to the letter. Petite, blonde, green eyes, as she came from Sarasota. And then I remembered Mike's reaction when she first saw me. Her dismissal of Edward as a possible suspect. There was obvious friction between Earl and Mike, too. I figured it was just normal in a couple who'd been married for a while. But now... Item 5, $1.30 phone call from the nearest booth I could find to Earl Poorman at his office in Sarasota.
No, she isn't, Johnny. Why?
Well, do you know where Mike is?
When I woke up this morning, I could hear her talking to her girlfriend, Betty, on the phone downstairs.
Betty?
Betty lives here in Sarasota. They used to be on the stage together, sister act, you know.
Yeah, well,
Well, then when I went down for breakfast, she was gone. Took my car, too. I had to come here to the office in a taxi.
Yeah, well, okay, Earl. Thanks a lot.
Hey, now, wait a minute. How are you doing? You found out anything I ought to know about this arson and murder business?
No, Earl. Nothing that you need to worry about. Liar. I sat down at a corner drugstore. That's item 5, 80 cents, over a sandwich and a Coke to try to think things out. But I'm afraid I didn't like anything that I thought. Finally, I drove over to Allen Place again. I parked a couple of blocks away and walked to 1726. I rang the front doorbell, knocked a couple of times. Then I slipped around to the back door, finagled a lock on it with a little celluloid pocket calendar, finally got it open. I left it open for the sake of a quick exit if such became necessary. But I guess that was a mistake. For a couple of minutes later, as I rounded a corner from the den into the living room, I felt the barrel of a gun poked into my back.
Out of town, huh? Eh?
Now, wait a minute.
Don't move, Eddie boy. Trying to stall off, pay me the $5,000 by saying you're going to be out of town, huh?
Okay, so you think I'm Edward Carr.
You kidding? Don't you know what happens when somebody tries to stall me? This...
I don't know exactly how long I was out, but when I came to, it was dark. Except for the glow from a streetlight outside. And what roused me was the sound of footsteps, feminine steps, cautiously entering the back door. Then, briefly, silhouetted against a window, I saw a trim, petite figure that was all too familiar coming toward me. And she saw me, too.
Oh, darling, you're hurt. What happened?
What do you think?
Who did this? Who struck you?
You don't know.
Yes, of course. It was Tony. Because you didn't pay him soon enough for the Arcadia job. Here, Eddie, let me help you.
No, just let me rest for a minute.
I thought that was Tony I passed on the road in from Sarasota.
Why'd you come over from Sarasota?
To see you. I knew you'd be here.
Oh, why?
Why? So the police could surprise you with the news of your poor dear brother's death. But why did you come to the house?
Because I hoped you'd come here, I guess.
Eddie... You should have waited until I could raise the money to pay off Tony.
You mean for killing Arnold, too?
Of course. No. Are you trying to say you didn't kill Arnold? But I saw you from outside in the Buick.
You'd swear to that, wouldn't you?
I don't know what to... Eddie, you sound like you don't trust me. We're in this thing together.
Yeah, you sure of that?
What are you talking about?
Whose idea was it to knock off Arnold?
But you had to. When he saw you at Arcadia, he knew that you were having the yards burned up.
That's the way you figured it from the beginning, wasn't it?
Now, look, baby.
First burn up the lumber yards and collect the insurance on them. Then convince me that you and I should have it all by putting Arnold out of the way.
But you had to kill up. I don't understand you, Eddie.
Yeah. And I wish I didn't understand you, Mike.
Mike?
Come on. Let's turn on a light.
No. No, somebody sees us. Eddie, you... Who are you?
Are you kidding, Mike? Wait a minute. Who are you?
You're that insurance investigator Johnny Dollar that Mike told me. Let me out of here.
Oh, no, you don't. You're staying right here. Mike Poorman's sister, aren't you? Well?
No, sister. So we once did a sister act before she married that Poorman guy. Now, let me go.
Not by a long shot.
You may as well, Dollar.
What?
Eddie.
Don't move, Dollar. Get his gun, Betty. Get it.
Yeah, sure. Here, Ed.
Good.
Ed Carr, huh?
That's right. And you know we do look alike, you and me.
Yeah, sure. Enough for Betty here to have told me all I need to know.
Don't believe him, Eddie. He's lying.
I heard.
No, baby. Eddie, I thought he was you. Don't you see?
Sure, sure. Why'd you come up here anyway?
Because Mike told me that Dollar was coming up here.
You've been shooting off your mouth at her, too?
She knew about us. She thought you might have something to do with the fire. She was my friend. She was trying to get me out of this whole mess, and I wish I'd listened to
her.
Well,
it's too late now, baby.
Eddie, what are you going to do?
Now, I got to get rid of both of
you. No!
And figure some way to shut up Tony's mouth.
Ed, please!
You know you'd never get away with it, Carr.
Oh, no, I'll call him. That's what I'll do. Yeah, Betty, and he'll come here to get his money. Then I'll call the police, see? Tell him to come right away. Tell him I found out about you having Tony start the fire.
What?
That's right, that you had him burn up the yard so there'd be even more money for you to bleed from me, like all the dough you got from me already.
You're crazy, Ed.
I'll tell the police to meet me here. And when they come in, it'll just be in time to see me kill Tony in self-defense after getting here too late to save you, I'll tell them.
You're out of your mind. They'll check that gun of yours so fast.
And that'll prove it. Because the only shot out of my gun will be the one that gets Tony. This gun of yours is the one that's going to knock you two off. And they'll think it's Tony.
Oh, Eddie, please, you're drunk or you're crazy.
Crazy to save my own life, to keep you and Tony and Dollar from putting a noose around my neck?
If you think that harebrained scheme of yours will ever work, you're off your
rocker. It's got to work, because it's my only chance, so it's going to work now.
Thanks, Lieutenant.
I'm afraid I was too late to save it, Johnny.
Yeah, yeah. But Eddie Carr will live to face a jury. What brought you here anyhow?
I did, Johnny.
Mike, stay there.
From Hollywood.
Stay right here, Mike.
I know. I don't want to see it. She was my friend.
Where's Earl?
I came alone. When I talked to Betty this morning, I knew your suspicions about Ed were right because, you see, I knew Betty and Ed were going together. Earl didn't know.
Yeah. Maybe you better call him. Expense account item 6, $9.80, gas and incidentals for the drive for the two of us back to Sarasota. Remarks? Betty, of course, has already paid for her part in the deal. And I guess it's pretty obvious what'll happen to Ed Carr and Tony Ricardo. The insurance money in the Carr estates will be distributed according to Florida law. Further remarks, the apparent friction between Earl and Mike was only part of a normal married life. They're a pretty nice pair. Oh, and I thoroughly enjoyed 3 days of fishing in the Gulf, thanks to Earl. Expense account total, including all the incidentals I could think of, $385.26. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Our star will return in just a moment. You don't have to be an efficiency expert to figure out that it's easier to lend your support to several worthwhile fundraising campaigns all at once than it would be helping one campaign at a time. That kind of efficiency is yours to enjoy through the United Community Campaigns. CBS Radio hopes that when the United Community Campaigns are underway in your town, that you'll remember how much good you can accomplish with one gesture of support. Now, here is our star to tell you about next week's story.
Next week, a case with a real twist. One that I think will just about tear your heart out. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, originates in Hollywood. It is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone, who also wrote tonight's story. Heard in our cast were Virginia Gregg, Harley Bear, Victor Perrin, Bob Bruce, Harry Bartell, Vivi Janis, Tony Barrett, and Junius Matthews. Musical supervision is by Amerigo Marino. Be sure to join us next week, same time and station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Dan Cubberly speaking. We'll be right back. NBC's great parade of new shows.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent.
NBC brings you Dragnet. You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned to homicide. There's a mad killer at large in your city. A woman has been brutally slain, the body mutilated. The picture is clear. The killer has a thirst for blood. Your job, get him.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime, investigated and solved by the men who unrelentingly stand watch on the security of your home, your family, and your life. For the next 30 minutes, transcribed in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Wednesday, January 12th. It was raining in Los Angeles. We were working the night watch out of homicide. My partner's Ben Romero. The boss is Ed Backstrand, chief of detectives. My name's Friday. I was on the way back from the morgue, and it was 11:23 p.m. when I got to room 42. Homicide.
Hi, Joe. Chief wants to see you. He's in there with Romero.
Thanks, Chandler. How's the wife?
Fine. How about your mother?
Better, thanks.
Hi, Joe.
Hi.
Come in. Sit down.
Did they post the body yet?
In the morning. Pretty messy. Strangled and mutilated.
The guy's a maniac, Skipper. The body shows it.
A murder like this, anybody's a suspect.
The coroner looked at the body. He says the weapon was a long, sharp instrument.
Found her in a hotel down on East 3rd Street. Man and your son discovered her about 7:30.
You talked to him?
It was too much for him. He passed out. Manager wasn't home. We'll check with him before midnight.
Close to it now, Joe. We better get going.
All right. The boys from the crime lab check the room.
They're still down there, Ed. The place is a mess.
Get back as soon as you can. We're working straight through on this thing.
That's a hot shot.
I'll get it.
At the Lux Hotel, room 219, corner of South Grand and Cordova. Dead body. Possible homicide. The Lux Hotel, room 219, corner of South Grand and Cordova. A dead...
What is it, Friday?
Lux Hotel, possible homicide.
Busy night.
Yeah. You coming, Ed?
Right. Let's go.
Six minutes later, Ed Backstrand, Ben, and I pulled up in front of the Lux Hotel. The manager met us at the door and led the way up a narrow stairway to the second floor. The room number was 219. We were prepared for the worst. We got it.
You're right, Romero. The guy must be a maniac.
Two hotels, two murders. The same M.O. Three of us made a brief inspection of the room at the Lux Hotel. We took a few notes on the appearance of the girl's body and a brief description. Apparently, she'd been strangled to death first, and then her body brutally mangled. Ben and I went back down to the lobby, and the manager, Mr. Ford, showed us the house book. The girl was registered together with a man, Mr. and Mrs. Philip Grant. We took the hotel register to have it checked for fingerprints and to photostat the handwriting. Ben notified the crime lab. Then we went back to the room and questioned the manager.
Mr. and Mrs. Philip Grant, that's all I know. I never saw either one of them before tonight.
When did they check in, Mr. Ford?
About 3 hours ago. That's right, about nine. Maybe a little before.
Did they register together?
Yeah, a little before nine. They came in together.
Did you let them in the room?
Yes, sir, like I always do. It's a small place here, maybe not first class, but I treat people right.
What did the man look like? Do you remember?
I think so. Kind of tall. Young, maybe 30 or so. Husky fella. Had a mustache.
How tall would you say, Mr. Ford?
Oh, about your height, Wade. Must have been at least 180. Seemed like a nice fella.
Would you know him if you saw him again?
I think so. People sure don't act like they look. You think it was him?
Can you think of anybody else?
Well, no. I never saw them before tonight, either one of them. I don't know anything about it.
Did you notice anything in particular about them when they came in?
Well, he didn't show it, but it looked like she'd been drinking a little. Giggling, you know.
And you didn't see this man Grant leave the hotel?
No, I didn't. I must have been checking the account books back of the desk. Guess he got by me.
Is there a back entrance to the hotel, Mr. Ford?
No, he had to come out this way, all right.
How about the fire escape?
I never thought of that. Say, I bet you cops think I'm trying to hide something.
How did you happen to find the body?
I don't know anything about it, honest. I've been running the hotel for 10 years now. Everybody knows me around here. You can ask at the bank.
All right, Mr. Ford. Now, would you mind telling us how you happened to find the body?
I don't want a lot of lousy newspaper publicity. Give the place a bad name. Can you blame me?
The newspapers won't get your name from us. All we want to know is how you happened to find the body.
Well, I told you. It's a small place here, but I like to treat people right. A couple hours after they checked in, I remembered I forgot to fill the ice water pitcher in the room. So I got some and took it up. The door was opened a little ways. It's got a bad catch on it. And the lights were on. I peeked in, and there she was. She was... Well, the guy must have been crazy.
Do you remember what time it was when you found her?
Well, just before I called the cops. About 11:30, I guess.
All right, Ford, that's all for now. When the other officers get here, show them up, will you?
Yes, sir, I sure will.
Romero?
Yes, Skipper?
Get on the phone downstairs and call the Metropolitan Division. Have them send us every available man from the reserve unit. We're going to patrol the area for the rest of the night.
Right, Chief.
Least we can do is make it hard for him. Two murders in 7 hours.
Yeah, both of them in a 3-block radius.
Yeah, same pattern. It's got to be the same guy.
All right, we got a description. What do you think?
Well, when the reserve unit shows up, have them cover this whole section of town. Pick up everybody who even comes close to that guy's description.
All right, Ed.
It's got to go fast. We can't lose a minute. 1 hour either way, it might mean another body. Like this one.
9 minutes later, at 4 minutes past midnight, the men from the crime lab showed up. It started to drizzle. They went over the room in detail. They dusted everything in the room for fingerprints, the walls, the doors, the fixtures in the bathroom, the lamps, chairs, everything. They took samples of the girl's blood and her lipstick. Small pieces of flesh and human hair were found under the girl's fingernails. The nails were scraped carefully and the contents put in an envelope, marked and sealed. Ed Backstrand ordered pictures taken of the room and the girl's body from different angles. Every object in the room that could have any possible tie-in with the murder was photographed. It was raining. The rear of the hotel where the fire escape was overlooked a vacant lot. Ben had a hunch. While the lab men were at work, we left the hotel and circled around into the lot for a look at the ground directly underneath the fire escape ladder. It was raining hard now.
Must be an easier way to make a living. Mud's almost up to my knee.
Mine too. Watch your step. See any prints?
No. Wait till my wife sees these new shoes.
Put it on your expense account.
All real funny.
Ben, get that light over here. Look.
Yeah. Good set of prints. Lucky that rain didn't start turning to wash them out by now.
Yeah. Hand me that cover from the trash can over there. I'll cover them. Wait a minute.
What?
Here, on the edge of the fire escape ladder.
Small hunk of cloth. Man suit?
Well, looks like it. Might have caught himself in that sharp corner. I got it. All right, come on, let's get back.
Yeah, out of this mud bath. Joe.
Huh?
Let me have a light.
Did you catch anything?
Hunk of wrapping paper in that trash can. Stains on it.
Open it up.
Look.
Yeah. Butcher knife. We went back to the Lux Hotel, room 219. The lab men were tearing the room apart. It was 10 minutes to 1. We gave the bloodstained knife and the piece of cloth we found on the fire escape to Lieutenant Lee Jones, head of the crime lab. We told him about the footprints just below the fire escape ladder.
The knife will help us, so will the cloth. I don't know about the footprints. You say you covered them?
That's right, Lee. They still look in pretty good shape.
Maybe we can do something if the rain hasn't broken them down too bad. Bracken...
Yeah, Lieutenant?
You and Sloan get downstairs and take a look at those prints. They're good enough. Get a torch, dry them out, make a cast, right?
Okay, Lieutenant. Come on, Sloan.
That's about all I can do for you now, Ed. I think we got everything there is to get.
All right, Jones. I'll follow you back to the lab in a couple of minutes.
Okay, Ed.
Good luck, fellas.
Thanks, Lee. We're going to need it.
All right, Friday. Romero, it's your baby for the rest of the night.
Lee, get anything?
A few prints, a woman's purse under the bed. Don't know if it's hers or not. No identification.
You going to be at the crime lab, Ed?
All night. As soon as we find anything, I'll let you know. Yeah?
A gang of cops just came in the lobby. They asked for you.
Must be the reserve men from Metropolitan. Tell them we'll be right down, Ford.
Okay.
You want us to handle it, Ed?
That's right. Do just as I told you. Spread them out over the whole area. Cover the streets, the alleys, the flop houses, restaurants, bars, everything. You got a description to go on. Find the man that fits it.
Right, Skipper.
Don't forget, the guy's a killer twice over. I don't think he'd hesitate on you. Be careful.
We went down to the lobby, and Ed Backstrand gave the reserve men their orders. Then Backstrand left, and Ben and I took over. We picked up another half dozen men in addition to the men in the reserve unit. They were deployed over an area of a dozen square blocks. It was one of the toughest sections of the city. With a general description of the suspect, some of them were to travel on foot, some in cruiser cars. A few minutes before 1 a.m., there was a steady downpour. Visibility was bad. At 3 minutes past one, the manhunt was on. For the first 30 minutes, Ben and I cruised the general area between East 3rd and College Streets and Alameda and Figueroa. No sign. The rain kept on. We sat and listened to the calls come in.
12A, call your station. 12A, KMA 367. Attention, all units. Recovered license plates in the sixth column. 4 Young, 7690. 41R, 788 Standard Avenue, at 373. 41R, KMA 367. Unit 71, at 2816 West La Cienega, the 507 party.
What do you think, Joe? Any hunches?
I think he's still around, somewhere inside these 12 blocks. I'd bet on it.
Five?
All right, you're on.
Want to check out a couple of these bars along here? Getting on to closing time.
It's a good idea. Pull over, huh? All right, let's check them for the next couple of blocks, huh?
Right.
For the next 6 blocks until closing time, Ben and I checked every bar and every informant we met along the way. The questions got to be automatic. Have you seen a man answering this description? Tall, dark, about 5'11", 180 pounds, well-built, mustache, about 30 years old. The answer's got to be automatic, too.
Sorry, officer, I haven't seen him.
No, can't remember him. Try the place down the street.
We kept on checking the bars until they closed for the night. Then we started on the all-night restaurants and coffee counters. We did plenty of legwork for the next hour. Not a trace. About 2:30, the rain let up a little, and then it started in heavy all over again.
That finishes that block.
Yeah, I better get the radio on.
Yeah. Beautiful weather.
By the bucketful. You want a smoke?
Thank you.
Control 4 to Unit 80K.
Is
your
that
location,
a
please?
Yeah.
80K, your location. KMA 367.
That's us, Joe. You want to take it?
Yeah, I got it. 80K to Control 4. 80K to Control 4. Our location, corner of Alameda and Commercial. KMA 367.
80K, stand by.
Something going?
Maybe. No, hold on a minute.
Control 4 to 80K. Go to the crime lab, code 2.
80K to Control 4, KMA 367.
Crime lab? Maybe those prints paid off.
Well, I hope so. Let's go.
That killer sure picked fine weather to work in. Feels like I've just been swimming in these clothes.
Yeah, I hope those guys in the crime lab have the heater on.
A hot bath and a warm bed lead me on.
Attention, all units.
Hold it. Let's get the radio.
Attention, all units. At 420 St. John's Place, a woman screaming. At 420 St. John's Place, a woman...
All right, double around, Ben. Hit the siren. I'll get the light.
Right, hold on. Left turn on the market, is that right?
Yeah, watch out for those car tracks. They're wet.
Hold on again.
The alley up ahead to your right, huh? All right, pull up, Ben. Put the streetlight over there.
There you are.
All right, come on. Let's go.
Officer! Officer, over here!
All right, what happened? Let's have it.
This girl, Rita, she was coming home up the street. A man, he tried to grab her. He slashed her coat. Look at her. I saw him as he ran under the streetlight.
Where'd he go?
Down that way, down the alley, over that fence there. A big man.
Davis. Davis, you there?
Yeah, Joe.
All right, Ben, go with Davis. Circle behind the alley. See what you can find. I'll call in.
All right, come on, Dave.
Yeah.
Always, look at her face. What's wrong with her?
Severe state of shock, it looks like. Get her in the house, huh? I'll call an ambulance. 80K to Control 4. 80K to Control 4.
Control 4, go ahead.
Direct all units in the vicinity to converge on area around St. John's Place from Jackson to Banning Street. A woman attacked by a large man with knife. Suspect left scene on foot. Possibly still in area. Request ambulance. KMA 367.
80K, roger. Stand by. Attention, all units. Attention, all units. Converge on area around St. John's Place, Jackson to Banning Street. 80K reports woman attacked by a large man with knife. Suspect left scene on foot.
In 3 minutes, the area around St. John's Place was surrounded. For the next hour, the men combed the neighborhood back and forth. Every building, every storehouse in the two square blocks was searched from basement to attic. No trace. The girl, Rita, was hysterical. She could give us only a bare description of her attacker. At 3:45 a.m., a detail was assigned to patrol the area, and the rest of the cars and men were deployed again in the general area from Figueroa to Alameda Street and East 3rd to College Street. The manhunt went on. So did the rain. At 3:54, Ben and I checked in at the Old City Jail building, second floor, the crime lab. Chief Ed Backstrand and Lee Jones were waiting for us.
Heard about the call. How'd he get away?
Not sure it was him, Skipper.
How do you mean?
Well, the girl wasn't hurt bad for one thing. No attempted strangling. For another thing, the guy stole her purse. That doesn't sound like the man we're after.
Did you get a description from the girl?
Didn't jibe too well, what she gave us. She was pretty hysterical.
And you raked the neighborhood good?
Every corner. Not a sign. You find anything?
Yeah. Jones?
Yeah, Ed.
Fill them in, will you?
Not one print on that knife you found, boys. Blood, but not a print. Your killer's crazy like a fox.
And how about the scrapings from the girl's fingernails, Lee?
Didn't help too much. Rarely do. Not enough to go on. Gotta have a fair-sized bit of flesh to run it for papal ridges. All we found under the girl's fingernails were small bits of skin.
Yeah?
She probably scratched the guy up some. Might have drawn blood. We had more luck with the footprints.
You get an impression?
Dried out the ground with torches and cast them. About size 10B.
That's fine, Lee. But how about the prints?
Only good one was a thumb. Real good. Got it off the wall near the light switch in the bathroom.
Did you classify it yet?
Yep. Found it in our single fingerprint file. The print belongs to a man by the name of Long. Robert Long.
You got a record, Ed?
Yeah. Misdemeanor. Two arrests for drunkenness last October. Petty theft in December. The mama sheet shows a dishonorable discharge from the United States Coast Guard in 1946. Age 29, 192 pounds, 5 feet 10 inches, dark hair, dark eyes.
That's close enough.
We got even closer, Joe. Long works as a counterman at the Cottage Cafe down on South Flower. Started there last week on the early morning shift, but he didn't show up for work last night.
Good. Where'd you get the tip?
The knife you boys found. Didn't have any prints, but it had a brand on it. We ran it down. It was taken from the Cottage Cafe.
Mm-hmm. Any address on this Robert Long, Ed?
Yeah, got it from his boss. Rooming house on East 1st. Landlady says he hasn't been home in 2 nights.
Yeah, now we wait.
Rooming house is staked out, and so is the Cottage Cafe, just in case Long decides to show up for work this morning. What time you got, Romero?
4:06.
All right. We've got every indication that Robert Long's the man we're after. His description, fingerprints, the knife, the footprint, his size. Maybe we're wrong. I don't think so.
How about a motive, Ed?
I think Robert Long likes to kill. He's thirsty for it. None of the victims were criminally attacked. They were strangled. Bodies mutilated.
How about robbery?
No. Two of the women he killed had money in their purses. He didn't touch it.
Well, what's next, Skipper? Back on the street?
Figueroa to Alameda. East 3rd to College Street. Keep a net around that area and work it back and forth until we're positive he's not inside. I think he is.
At 4:10 a.m., Ed Backstrand, Ben, and I left the crime lab and drove to the surrounded area. It was still raining. We passed several patrolmen from the reserve unit making the rounds. They didn't look any more comfortable than we felt. At Broadway and Alpine Street, Ben and I got out and started patrolling on foot again. Backstrand followed in the car to maintain a radio check. We must have covered 24 blocks and a half a dozen coffee counters before we got to the Criterion Restaurant and Donut Shop, a few blocks up the street from the Cottage Cafe.
Hey, Skipper, you want to take a minute for some hot coffee? I'll keep an ear on the radio.
You two go ahead. You look drenched.
Yeah, we are. Will we bring you some back in a paper carton?
Fine, thanks. Cream. No sugar.
All right, Ed. Come on, Ben.
Place is empty.
Yeah.
Yes, sir, gentlemen. What'll it be? Hot coffee?
Yeah, there's two of us here. Can you fix up one to go?
Sure thing.
Say, on that one to go, cream, no sugar.
Right. Say, you fellas cops?
Yeah, why?
No offense, just wondering. Here you are.
Thank you.
Cop in uniform was around a couple hours ago. Wanted to know if I'd seen some guy he was looking for.
Tall, about 190 pounds, mustache, about 30 years old.
Yeah, that's the description he gave me. He was looking for the guy.
So are we.
Say, that's good. That other cop came in right at my busiest time, a little after 2 when the bar's closed. You know, it gets pretty rushed, and I didn't have much time to think, so I just said no. And then after the cop left, I remembered.
You saw a man answering that description tonight?
Yeah. I would have told the cop, but I was rushed. You know how it is. No time to think, and then I remembered.
Are you sure?
Oh, I'm sure, all right. Whoever he is, he's a lady killer.
What do you mean?
No offense. There was a sharp-looking dame down the end of the counter, and this guy breezes in and picks her up. Talks to her about 20 minutes, buys her a cup of coffee, and they walk out together.
Do you remember what she looked like?
Oh, nice-looking dame. Not beautiful, you know. More on the cute side.
Ben, you got that morgue shot?
Oh, yeah. Here it is.
Thanks. Here's a picture. This the girl?
Let's see. Yeah, that's her. Who is she?
I don't know, mister. Down at the morgue, they call her Jane Doe, number 7. Just by accident, we'd come across a concrete lead on the killer's method of operation. The picture we showed the man in the donut shop was a shot of the strangler's first victim the night before. Evidently, the killer would enter a bar, coffee shop, or restaurant, strike up a conversation with a woman, make friends with her, either buy her drinks or invite her to a bar in the neighborhood, and then the rest of the puzzle was still unsolved. We went back to the cottage cafe and checked with the men on stakeout.
Not a sign of them, Chief.
How are you men covering the place?
Baxter up in front in the booth across from the cash register. Lyman's back with the dishwashers. I'm at the counter.
When's Long due to report for work, Dave?
At 5. About 20 minutes to go.
You're lucky you're inside. It's wet out there.
You're looking.
All right, Davis. We'll be around about 5.
Right, Chief.
Let's get back in the car.
Where to, Skipper?
Cruise the next 2 blocks, but don't go too far. If Long shows up for work this morning, we want to be around.
The next 10 minutes dragged by. The rain kept on. Backstrand chewed nervously on a cigar. At South Flower and First Street, the sewers were clogged with street refuse. The rain backed up and filled the intersection. A group of aircraft workers huddled together in a doorway on one corner, waiting for the bus. It was cold and damp. I opened one of the back windows in the car to get some fresh air in. Off in the distance and close by, we could hear the sounds of a big city waking up slow to a rainy January morning. It was 5:08.
Attention all units. Attention all units. At 780 East Main, a restaurant. Man answering description of murder suspect.
All right, Romero, step on it.
Right, Skipper.
About 10 blocks away, Ed. Who's going to cover the men at the cottage cafe?
If this is a blind lead, it won't take us long to find out. They can handle it alone if they have to.
Hang on.
Look out. We're skidding.
That was a close one, Ben.
Yeah. If this is the guy, I owe you $5, right?
Yeah.
Attention all units. Additional information on your call to 780 East Main. Officers in pursuit of suspect. Suspect is on foot.
Step on it, Romero.
2 more blocks, Skipper.
Watch it, Ben. Next one to the left.
Got it.
That's the joint up ahead there.
All right, watch your step and don't take chances. Don't play with it.
Right.
Here we go.
He went out the back. Ran down that alley.
Come on, Ben.
Behind you.
You men, hustle it. Circle around the block and choke off the alley. Fast. Emerson, boom. Go with him.
Right. All right, over the fence, Ben. Ben, look out, look out. You all right?
It's not that good. Come on, Joe.
All right.
There he goes. Between the buildings.
Stop or I'll shoot.
The next house. He ducked into the basement.
All right, cover me.
Right.
Come on, he broke through the garage doors.
There's Davis.
Dave, he slipped through. Get down to the next corner and ring the block.
Yeah.
Ben, did you follow him?
Yeah, right on his tail, that warehouse, a couple of lots over. He went through the back.
There it is, Joe.
All right, don't go in blind. Watch out. All right, you haven't got a chance. Come out with your hands up.
He's not stopping, Joe.
All right, let's fan out. All right, Ben, cover me. I'm going for the door. All right, Ben, come on. You're clear. You spot him? There he is. Let's get him.
Close. He's in a good spot. Let's move.
He's up in the loft. Come on, let's head for the stairs.
Will you?
Easy. You spot him, Ben?
No. Not a sign.
Ben, look out. That packing tail.
Kind of close, don't you?
Yeah. Let's get that punk now.
Look out, Joe. There's another one.
All right, you. We got the warehouse surrounded. Come on down. All right, then we'll blast you out.
Joe, he's dropping down the ladder. He's going for the front door.
They're waiting for you with Tommy guns out there. They'll cut you down. Stop.
Joe, he's got the door open. He's making a break for it.
He's crazy. He's trying to shoot his way out.
Well, he asked for it.
Yeah. Let's take a look. Messed up.
Well, like his girlfriends.
Yeah. Maybe he just didn't like women.
Maybe. Hi, Ed.
You all right?
Tired.
This is him, huh? Even the scratches that girl made on his face. Description match?
5'10", 192 pounds, dark hair, dark eyes, age 29. Robert Long, killer.
The story you have just heard is true. Only the names were changed to protect the innocent.
You have just heard the 10th in a new series of authentic cases transcribed from official files. Technical advice for Dragnet is furnished by the Los Angeles Police Department.
Tonight's program is dedicated to Detective Lewis A. Abbott of the Chicago Police Department, who on the afternoon of March 3rd, 1947, gave his life so that yours might be more secure.
Dragnet came to you from Los Angeles. If you enjoyed tonight's production of Dragnet, you'll probably want to listen this Saturday evening to a pair of adventure shows featuring two well-known Hollywood personalities. You'll enjoy Brian Donlevy, star of Dangerous Assignment. Also on Saturday's schedule is Richard Diamond, private detective, as played by the screen's romantic tough guy, Dick Powell. Listen to both of these exciting programs this Saturday over most of these NBC stations. This is NBC, the national broadcasting company.
That's Case Closed for this week. If you want to hear more Johnny Dollar, more Dragnet, more crime stories, or any type of old-time radio, just visit RelicRadio.com. Poke around, search for what you're after. Find links to all the other podcasts and everything else Relic Radio right on the front page. And a link to our donate button. If you'd like to help support this and all the Relic Radio shows, you can do so from the website as well. Thanks, as always, to those who have donated. You're the ones making this possible. And thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.